Hi, this is John Jenkins, Managing Director of DealLawyers.com, and I'd like to welcome you to this edition of our Deal Lawyers Download podcast. My guest today is Eric Jesse, who is a partner at Lowenstein Sandler. Eric is here today to discuss his firm's recent report on trends in the rep and warranty insurance claims. The firm issued a similar report back in 2020, and a lot has changed since then in the RWI marketplace, as anybody who does transactional work knows. Now, I will say the report does not waste a lot of time getting to the big question for buyers in a changing marketplace. In fact, it does it on the title page. That's because the report's title is, Are Buyers Still Getting Paid? The Evolution of R&W Insurance Claims. So Lowenstein certainly can't be accused of burying the lead on this report. But anyway, welcome to the podcast, Eric. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you having us.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and your practice?
Sure, happy to. So as you mentioned, I'm a partner in Lowenstein Sandler's Insurance Recovery Group. And so we exclusively represent policyholders in insurance coverage claims and in disputes against insurance companies. So we don't represent insurance companies. And my practice is primarily devoted to R&W insurance. And that's in two ways. You know, Lowenstein has a vibrant M&A practice. And so I will work with our buy side clients during the deal to try and negotiate the strongest R&W policy possible. And then if and when there is a breach that is discovered after the closing, we will represent the buyer in trying to pursue that R&W insurance claim.
Great. Well, can you give us, maybe kick things off here by providing us an overview of the methodology and the scope of the survey report that you folks have put together?
Yeah. So we really wanted to just understand everything we could about the R&W claim process. You know, that was back in 2020, right before COVID and again today. And so we went to the source, right? We wanted to hear from R&W insurance stakeholders. And so we conducted a survey that consisted of buyers. So that was private equity firms, investment bankers, and strategic buyers. But we also surveyed the insurance industry as well. So we heard, got feedback and responses from R&W insurers and R&W brokers. And so we ultimately had a total of 154 respondents across those different stakeholders. And we asked about their ability, you know, the ability to negotiate a claims payment, how long it takes to resolve a claim, where the breach is coming from, both in terms of the types of breaches and industries and, you know, coverage defenses that were on the rise.
Great. Well, let's start with the headline question. Are buyers with the RWI still getting paid? And if so, what's different about the claims process than you found when you looked at it back in 2020?
Yeah. So yes, that is the key question that our clients have when they are, selecting a policy or selecting a carrier, I should say. And look, they still are getting paid, but what we're seeing is that it is a little bit more of a difficult process. So, you know, in 2020, when we conducted this survey, 87% of respondents reported that there was the ability to negotiate a claim payment with the carrier. So you avoided litigation. And that was for claims that exceeded the policy retention. Now, the results were a little bit more disappointing. That number has dropped to 60%. And, you know, in a way, that's not surprising as insurers, are reporting increased claim frequency and severity, that the claim payment has been constricting a little bit. Another finding we had was that the process still takes a long time. The majority of respondents reported that it takes anywhere from 1 to 3 years to resolve a claim. But I think another key finding that was promising for R&W insurance is that R&W insurance is needed because 61% of respondents reported claims that were exceeding the self-insured retention. And that's down from 71% in 2020. And so that's a good thing for buyers because that means more claims are exceeding the retention. It means buyers have a need for an R&W insurance policy when claims are reaching the limits.
Talk about some of the major changes in the RWI marketplace that you've seen over the past 3 years and whether there are emerging trends that are going to influence how it may continue to evolve over the next several years.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the key issue that we found, or the key takeaway that we have here, is that, you know, R&W insurers need to, you know, really take, I think, a hard look at their claim investigation process, because that process is taking too long. And, you know, and now with claim payments not being at the level that they were, or the ability to negotiate a claim payment not being at the level it was back in 2020, it really makes for a much more challenging process. And I think, you know, this shows that the insurers may have frankly just forgotten who their customers are, because it's buyers, whether it's private equity firms or strategic buyers, you know, from on the, you know, in corporate development, but they move at a fast pace. And so, you know, our clients, buyers, are able to close multi-million dollar deals in a matter of months. And the R&W insurers, when they're underwriting the policy at that time, they keep pace. But when a claim is made, all of a sudden it takes years to resolve the process. And so there's really a disconnect. You know, same thing even with the information gathering process. When the deal is going on and the R&W policy is being underwritten, right? The R&W insurers, they receive the diligence reports and they have a 2-hour call with the buyer and its advisors to place the policy. But when it comes to the claim, what we're seeing is a very, you know, protracted, you know, claim investigation process where, you know, the information requests that buyers receive look like discovery and litigation, where insurers want to look over or look under every, you know, stone, pebble, rock, and grain of sand. And, you know, I think what it comes down to is, you know, R&W Insurance was born out of the M&A market, where parties want to make a deal and be commercial. And the R&W claim process took on that sense of commerciality, but it seems like that might be eroding a little bit here, and that these policies might be just becoming more commoditized like other types of insurance lines.
Yeah, that's, if I can follow up on that, I know that, you know, there was just an explosive growth in this industry, and everybody wanted to be in it. You know, buyers, it was just such a convenient and just a great way to, you know, to handle rep and warranty issues and get deals closed quickly and that type of thing. But I know a lot of people for several years have been cautioning, you know, this really hasn't been stress tested yet. Are people going to get paid? Are these things too good to be true? And it sounds like that they're being stress tested, because now we've got some claim experience under these policies. And maybe the answer is, you know, people aren't running away from the marketplace, but it's starting to look an awful lot more like every other type of insurance policy that you've dealt with over the years.
Yeah, and that's really the concern here, because the last thing the R&W insurers should want is for buyers to push back on a seller who wants an R&W policy, or to really question it, because, you know, R&W insurance brings many, many good things to a deal. It really eases the negotiation process, whether it's over the reps or over an indemnity structure, right? It allows for a thorough diligence process. It allows for a longer time period to bring claims. You can, you know, get, you know, within reason, limits of liability in your choice. And so you have more protection than you might be able to negotiate from a seller in a traditional deal. So there are all these good things, and as I mentioned, you know, earlier, there is a need for R&W insurance as buyers have claims and those claims exceed the retention. And you know, I know the R&W insurers won't want to hear this, but that's a good thing. If buyers need the policy, right, then that is a good thing for the R&W market, so that they can continue to sell it, because there are plenty of buyers who will say, well, I've never had a claim, so I'm not going to invest the time and money in a policy. So there is the need. But in order for that need to remain, carriers need to be responsive on the claim side. And so they need to, you know, maybe hopefully go back or be much closer to 2020, where there was a little bit a greater sense of commerciality than today.
Great. Let's talk about some of the blocking and tackling here of the claims issues. First of all, what are the rep and warranties breaches that are driving claims under these policies?
Yeah. So Financial statement breaches, our claims involving those types of breaches continue to take the lead both in 2020 and today. And, you know, I really think that's just a product of, you know, the financials are something that are going to be looked at post-closing closely. They're going to be audited. And so once that audit process is completed, it's an opportunity to, I guess, just naturally discover any breaches. So that continues to remain front and center. And you know, with those types of breaches being front and center, right, that's where there can also be significant losses because buyers will try and, in many cases, say that the damages should be, you know, based on the multiple that was used at the time the deal was negotiated. And so, you know, that's the claim severity that the carriers are experiencing. Another type of breach that increased as well, and this, you know, I guess really should have come as a surprise, is cyber and data security, right? As cyber threats continue to exist and expand or you know, just grow at an increasing, you know, a strong pace, you know, the claims follow. And then another interesting breach that we saw is that, you know, we saw more R&W insurance being used more for manufacturing targets in our latest survey. And so we saw more environmental rep breaches.
Follow up on that, you know, again, this is back in the olden times, 2020 and before. I situations, I had a colleague who was negotiating an acquisition, and they were getting down to their reps and warranties, and the seller's counsel made a, I think it was half facetious, but not entirely, saying, I guess I could have some comments on the rep and warranties, but I'm not really sure why I should care. It was an insured deal. It was basically viewed as the buyers and the insurance company's problem. That, I think, influenced due diligence a little bit. The carriers did not historically have huge expectations of buyers when it came to the due diligence process. They wanted it to be reasonable. Seems like that may be changing, and that they're being a lot more demanding about what they're looking for in terms of due diligence from the buyers before they're going to sign off on a policy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the due diligence process or the underwriting process that the carriers undertake, you know, I think it is you know, involved. And I think what we really see is that as, you know, claims are made with respect to certain breaches, right, then the carriers take that information and they apply it on the underwriting side. So, for example, you know, material contracts, those types of breaches have been on the rise in recent years. And so what we see when we're negotiating the policy and underwriting the policy is you see a lot more questions than you used to on material contracts, right? You know, what was the number that were reviewed? Was it just the top 10 or was it everyone? Are customer calls being conducted? Are supplier calls being conducted? You know, how are the, you know, what is the strength of those relationships? So, you know, as we see, you know, new and emerging types of breaches, right, we can expect a more intensive underwriting process on those. So that's definitely happened.
Defenses. What defenses are insurers raising to either avoid to avoid payment of claims or to reduce their potential exposure for claims?
Yeah. So you know, the most, I guess, you know, surprising or maybe even troubling one was we saw a significant increase in coverage defenses involving whether there was a breach and whether there was a loss, right? And those are the two threshold questions that need to be established in order to even access the policy, right? You need a breach and a loss. So we saw, you know, at the very front end, you know, carriers are now really honing in on those types of coverage defenses, because if they can, you know, win or you know, establish that there's no breach or there no loss, then they don't have that coverage obligation. So we did see a significant increase there. And, you know, I think, you know, part of the reason I think that there's also just an increase on carriers challenging the losses because of the multiplied damages, right? That I think is a key driver for some of the severity of claims that the carriers are experiencing. We also see that carriers are continuing to assert what I'll call these, you know, avoidable coverage defenses, at least from the buyer or policyholder perspective. So, for example, these policies can cover a third-party lawsuit that emerges and is based on pre-closing conduct. And so the failure to obtain the insurer's consent to a settlement, you know, was a significant coverage defense that we saw. 33% of respondents reported that defense. And again, that's something that's avoidable by keeping the lines of communication open with the insurance company. You know, late notice was another coverage defense we saw. So that's something that can be prevented by, you know, by providing prompt notice once the breach is discovered. And then, you know, another defense that shouldn't come as a surprise is COVID. You know, when these policies were being negotiated, you know, starting in March 2020, COVID was a standard exclusion, and that exclusion has, you know, gone away over time and been significantly narrowed over time, but carriers have not hesitated to invoke that exclusion as well.
Great. Well, maybe as a final question, Eric, you know, in light of the changes you're seeing in the marketplace, general thoughts for buyers as they move forward and are looking at RWI policies, what kind of advice would you give them big picture in today's environment?
Yeah, you know, I think when a buyer is taking a look at, you know, when they work with their broker to go out to the R&W market and obtain quotes for their deal, right, I think they'll see that a lot of the quotes will be similar, both in terms of pricing and proposed deal-specific exclusions or heightened risks. And so the key question that buyers need to be asking their broker, their deal counsel, their coverage counsel is, you know, what is this carrier's practice to paying claims? Do they pay claims? What's your experience? Are they on the commercial side of the spectrum, or is it more of the sand in the gears and, trying to, as I said earlier, look under every stone, rock, and pebble to try and get as much information as possible. So it's really asking about, a particular carrier's approach and practice on the claim side.
Great. Well, before we close today's podcast, I want to remind our members that we've posted a copy of the Lowenstein report in our transaction insurance practice area. So be sure to check out the entire thing. Eric has covered an awful lot of ground today, but there's still an awful lot of more interesting tidbits in the report that I would commend to anyone who is anyone who's in the marketplace for RWI or who looks like they may have a claim under a policy. Anyway, Eric, thanks so much for a very informative podcast, and thanks to everybody else for joining us today.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. It was a good time.